I watch. And so I would like to start just by way of introduction and clarification. I'm Mark Olson, and this session is part of a series that I'll be doing on becoming a Jubilee people, and this particular session is on income inequalities. Just a word about myself. I'm editor of a magazine called The Other Side. It's a magazine that was started in 1965. It deals with social justice and peace issues from a Christian perspective. It's a non-denominational ecumenical Christian magazine. Also, I should say I don't speak at any of these sessions as an expert on anything. I'm just here to share what limited perspectives I have, and hopefully to elicit some interaction with you and to learn from what you have to share as well. As we begin, let's just have a word of prayer. God of all joy, God of all mercy, we thank you for the chance to be here at Holden Village. Thank you for the people that are here with us, the world that is here around us. And we pray that you would open our hearts, that you would open our minds, and that you would open our lives. We pray in the name of Jesus. Amen. I'm a person who likes to tell stories. I'm a person who likes to write stories sometimes. And so I would like to start by sharing a brief story with you as a way of opening our discussion, something that I wrote a few years ago on The Other Side. I wasn't there when it happened, so I can only tell you what I heard. But what I heard was pretty amazing. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it's sometime late in this century before some of my folks' neighbors stop talking about it. It was one of those hectic Saturday mornings. Laundry, cleaning, grocery shopping, errand running, bill paying, the works. My folks had an agenda a mile long, and just as they were concluding that there was only one chance of 10 in 10 of getting everything done, there was a phone call from Marsh Peterson, the well-meaning, warm-hearted assistant pastor of their church, who called up to ask if he could stop by. He had a little something he wanted to talk to them about, he said, something he wanted to get their reaction to. I can just hear my folks hemming and hawing and finally saying, well, sure, he could stop by anytime he liked. Nothing surprising in that. It wouldn't matter if they were hosting a wedding reception or in the middle of moving out of state. They certainly wouldn't want to be the kind of person who would turn down a minister of the gospel. Afterwards, thinking he better put a move on it, my dad went hurrying and scurrying, trying to get ready for Marsh Peterson's impending arrival. On one of his fast-moving trips across the yard, he noticed his Ford Galaxy sitting in the driveway next to the front door, right where he and Mom always parked it. And out front, the traffic on the street in which they lived, which was a busy street, seemed heavier than usual. And he knew that when people parked their cars on the street, they often ended up with smashed fenders or worse. And so he decided to pull his old car farther up into the driveway so that when Marsh Peterson came by, he would have room to comfortably get his own vehicle off the road. Not wanting to waste any time, he pulled open the front passenger door, the door that was closest to him, and slid in, efficiently extracting his keys from his pocket in a quick, smooth motion. He just eased the car up to the closed garage door, he thought. This would give Marsh plenty of room. Still sitting on the passenger side, Dad inserted the key into the ignition, gave it a turn, and smiled contentedly as the V8 powerhouse came alive. His mind still racing down the list of things he had to do, he leaned over and put the car in gear. his left foot ready over the brake to bring it to a halt when it had sufficiently rolled into place. Or so he thought. For as the white wooden garage door came closer, and as he slowly pushed down on what he thought was the brake, nothing happened. The car didn't seem to be slowing down. In fact, it almost seemed to be speeding up. He pushed harder, and once again the old Ford got the wrong idea. It was going faster yet. The garage door was almost upon him. In fact, he realized as he spun his head around to see what that crashing noise was, he had just gone through it. The car didn't seem to be slowing down. And as and this was getting alarming. Something had to be done. What was there to do but slam on the brakes with all the force he could muster? He stomped down with all his might as the hood of the now mighty Ford sped pell-mell towards the back wall of the garage. And lo and behold, before he knew what was happening, the back wall of the garage had swung up like the gate on a chute, hinged on the top, and the car was weaving wildly through the backyard, finally coming to rest beside a tall oak tree. Marvin Wyatt from next door, a retired high school chemistry teacher, couldn't believe his eyes. There was my dad, emerging from his car, still reeling, from the back wall of the garage, after swinging open so considerately, had crashed back into place as if nothing had happened, except for a broken-out silhouette of a 1968 Ford Galaxy on the front door of the garage. There was no way of knowing how in the world my mild-mannered, non-drinking, unassuming father had gotten the family automobile into the backyard peonies. Nor was it quite clear how he would get it out. The houses in our block, to reduce costs, having been built quite close to each other. Now, I tell that story because making room for the gospel always seems to be like that. I guess that's why I'm so afraid of it. Maybe that's why we're all so afraid of it. You give the gospel an inch, and it takes a mile. You offer to move up a ways in the driveway, and the next thing you know, you're standing in the backyard, wide-eyed and flabbergasted. The other Sunday at my church, they were asking for more volunteers to work with the homeless. And I guess I'd like to help, but I've got this terrible feeling that they might end up living with me. Feed the hungry? Sure, but how do I keep them at a distance? My wife and I have bought a house. How are we going to deal with Jesus suggesting that we sell all and give to the poor? Luke says that the Spirit of the Lord came on Jesus, and it took him to a cross. I wasn't there when that happened either, but folks have been talking about it for 2 millennia, and I guess for 2 millennia we've all been a little afraid that that's where it would take us as well. What we're here to talk about today is kind of a scary subject: income, salaries, money, that which we live on, and it's something that there is wide disparity in our world about. Even in our society, in our culture, it's apart from Christianity, it's not something we talk about freely, particularly our own income. And it's a subject where we maybe know that there are these great differences, and we don't quite know how to deal with them. In talking about that today, I want to narrow our focus a little bit. We have a whole world in which there's great diversity of income, and I'm not going to talk about the whole world today. That will always be, I suppose, in the back of all of our minds. But I want to think mostly about the United States. Because I sort of have a feeling that what our attitudes are towards income disparities, our richness and poverty, where we are in comparison to others, right here affects how we'll think about the whole world. And if we have this as a problem that we can't deal with here, I'm not sure we're going to deal with it very effectively beyond our own country. So what we're going to be talking about today is mostly the United States, where we also have great income disparities and great poverty. And we're going to try to look at that, and I hope that we can think about that together. Now, I have a little exercise. This is not going to be just a talking session. And any of you who don't want to participate don't have to. But if you would each take one of these sheets, and I don't know if you all come to these things with pens or pencils, but I have a little envelope of pencils. And if you will return the pencil to me, feel free to take one. The little sheet you're getting is a little income calculator. And it's because I want to talk about this a little bit, that I wanted to share this with you. Now, if there are any extras of those, I'd like to get them back. Basically, what I want you to do, step one on this, is to, if you look at the front, step one is to think about your household, and we're talking about a household here, not you individually. And try to, you're not going to share this information with anyone else. This is just for yourself. This is just an exercise for our discussions. To think, what is your household income? Your salaries that you might get, pensions, interest income, investment incomes, rental incomes, whatever your income is, before taxes. We're not talking about what you actually get, but what your total household income is. If you're in a situation where you're retired, or you're a student, or here on as a volunteer for a long time and you don't really have any income, you might want to think about a family or a household that you've been a part of, one of your relations or your parents or your children or whatever. It doesn't matter whether it's yours, just think about a particular household's income that you're familiar with and that's close to you. Figure out what the total is. Then step two, I'd like you to guess, roughly speaking, what percentage of U.S. households do you suppose have more income every year than you, or than the particular household that you've chosen here? Okay?
You want yearly or?
Yes, this is yearly.
Yearly.
Okay.
Annual.
Why don't you at least do that part? I mean, just think of a particular household, one that either you're a part of or that you know well, and what's the total income from all wage earners, everything. And then what percentage of U.S. households do you suppose make more than that? Make a guess. I'll give you a minute to do that, and then we'll talk about this a little bit. Have you all gotten that far? Okay. Now, so you got a guess down there. Now, on step four, I want you to find the total household income that you came up with on that chart, and you'll see an index number next to that. And take that index number, put it down on step 5, multiply it by 3.
Some jump.
Yeah.
And that's the truth, but yeah. It doesn't even go that way. I don't know, no 6,000. I'll just use 218.
Well, that's down here.
Oh, I didn't, oh.
Yeah. The table is on both sides. It continues. If you don't, you should be able to find a figure if you look in enough places, okay? And then on step 6, you divide that number by 10. Basically, you just move it one decimal point over. Okay. Now, what you got on step 6, that's the approximate number of people, percentage of people in the United States who have higher incomes, household incomes, than you. Did it make sense to you, what you got? Okay. How many of you guessed the percentage on number step 2 within, say, 5%? Okay, good. Okay, how many of you guessed that there were more people making more than you than there actually were? Okay, and how many of you guessed that there were fewer people with a higher household income than there actually were? Uh-huh. Okay, so most of you underestimated the percentage. And that's the typical pattern. Most of us imagine that we're imagine that we're lower in the scale than we really are, because we imagine that there are fewer poor people than there really are. And my wife,
or more rich
people. Right? Yeah, that's right. That's right. My wife, who teaches sociology, does an exercise like this with her students every year and has done it for about 20 years now. And typically, most college students, who of course aren't going to maybe have as much sense of the world as you all, underestimate by 20 to 30%. Or in other words, I mean, they put themselves 20 to 30% lower than they really are. And they oftentimes get very mad when they realize what the distribution of income in the U.S. is and where that puts their household. I think we oftentimes aren't aware of the range, because there's really... Though we're better off than some countries, there's tremendous class segregation in our society. And you think about the neighborhoods that we live in, the schools that we go to, the churches, the restaurants, the kind of people we associate with. We tend to associate people with similar incomes. And so we begin to imagine that our level is where everyone is. When we travel as well, we go to places where we encounter people pretty much like ourselves. If you go to Florida, you probably don't go to the migrant labor camps. But if you're a migrant laborer and you go to Florida, you probably don't go to the beaches. So where we go tends to influence our awareness. Also, the mass media tends to focus more on higher income people, and higher income is portrayed as normal. There was a movie a few years ago called Ordinary People, set among very upper middle class people in the Chicago suburbs. They were probably, if you looked at an income distribution and imagined what their income was based on how they were living, they were probably in the top 5% of U.S. income. And yet that was a movie called Ordinary People. The advertising world also is constantly pushing consumerism and making it seem as if having all these things is normal. You're not normal if you don't have all these things. And then it's just threatening to think that we have more than others. So we kind of suppress that knowledge. There has been in the last, particularly in the last 10 years or so in the United States, a growing gap between the rich and the poor. The income distributions are skewing downward, and that's an alarming situation, and a dangerous situation, and a situation that I believe is not where God would have us be in our country. I want to give you another little exercise now, a sort of a case study to talk about, and I would like you to maybe gather in some little groups of three or four people, something like that, and I'll give each group a little case study and some questions to talk about. And that will help us think about incomes a little bit. But before we do that, I want to give you a little bit of background on a couple things. There are different ways, our incomes come from different sources and through different means, and there are different ways that they could come. One way that is often talked about is wages that are what's called equitable. And that sounds like a great word, sounds like a fair word, but equitable means that you're paid according to what your work is worth. Now, what your work is worth, there is no absolute standard for that. It's what it's worth to who's doing the paying, really, is what that means. And people who are doing the paying assess the value in terms of their own priorities, their own needs, and tend to also use, I think, possibly some biases, because we all have built-in biases, class biases, racial biases, whatever. But an equitable wage is what is it worth to do this particular kind of job? And that is not there's not an absolute there. It's a subjective thing. There are wages that are equal. Everybody gets the same, no matter what they're doing. That's fairly clear. I think. Then there's another one that's needs-oriented. You're paid what you need. If you're all paid the same and you have different starting points, obviously the results are different still. So some people have suggested a needs-oriented compensation system where you're not paid according to what your job is worth in the marketplace. You're not all paid the same. You're paid according to what your needs are. Some people make their income from none of these means and are simply use wealth multiplication. They already have money and they invest it and get more money. It's not income in the sense of labor. The Other Side magazine where I work, we have for many years, since the beginning of the magazine 25 years ago, we have paid people on a something combining equal and needs-oriented basis. All of our staff are paid under a common salary schedule that applies to all of us, under which there is an assessment of needs. So payment is based on that. I'm the editor, and I've been with the magazine for 17 years, but I receive far less than people who have just started the magazine, or single mothers, or whatever. Let me give you, I want you to divide into these groups, and we're going to talk about in each group a little case study, and then come back and talk about that, okay? Do you have any questions? Anything I've been saying? Anything you want to say? Okay. Try to, just where you are, whatever, just get into a little group here, and I'd just like to take a couple minutes for someone from each group to tell us something about what the discussion was like in your group, or some interesting point that you your group would like to express, or that someone in your group expressed. Just some sense of what your conversation was like. If we start over here.
Yeah, I think our group was probably most challenged with the last question when you say, what do you do about this as a Christian when you're in this kind of a system? And at first we started making the excuses for old Charlie, just in terms of, well, if we're moving into this system, we just started work, and we're just going to have to wait it out, and you know, he'll retire soon, and we can't really do much. But as we pushed the question within the group, we began to realize that the system does need to be accountable for at least quality, and try to reward somehow for quality. I mean, there needs to be a better review system for the teaching staff so that they're doing at least quality work for what they're getting paid. Someone in our group mentioned, well, let's push for benefits for Bernice, a daycare center on site. Maybe push for at least non-wage benefits such as health insurance and maybe some retirement benefits. We were sort of frustrated with the good old boy system that this sort of represented in terms of the non-accountability of many higher paying positions, both in academics as well as in government. And it seems like that, in a sense, in the private business sector, there's more accountability just because of the marketplace phenomenon. If you make a good product at a competitive price that people want, at least there's a reward there. And if you're not doing a good job, then you don't make it, as opposed to a protected tenure system or a protected government position.
Okay. What about the next group?
I think we sort of came to some similar conclusions, which is this unnamed person, female person who comes in the beginning at least, doesn't really have a lot of power to do anything if you've just been hired. But there is a sense that you can become at least an advocate for the Bernice types who are seen to be powerless.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, our group thought that there was more concern about the inequities between Bernice's salary and the new professor. And some possibilities were to give money to Bernice directly, but then we wondered what that might do to her pride. We talked about maybe you could give some of the money and do things in the community that would give a certain amount, maybe part of the difference in the salaries. Use it for a good people in the area, work towards changing the system, and don't take a job because then you're working within the system that's not.
Okay. Next group.
I think we got into a wide-ranging discussion before really answering this question. We didn't try as a group to get this question answered. But there were some suggestions, which was that it was easier to bring one salary down than the other one up. In other words, it might be easier to penalize Charlie, although he's still in a tenure system. And we discussed a lot of different occupations and what they made and the relative fairness of that. And looked at elementary school teachers, doctors, lawyers, and union carpenters, and that kind of thing. And felt, I think, as a group that that there should be more of an equal or pay scale for all those people. Mm-hmm. And some people were, in fact, making a lot too much.
Okay. What's the next group there?
In answer to the first question, we believe this was an illustration of an equitable salary system, but illustration of who decides, you know, how society or parts of society within society values different kinds of work. For example, my brother being a bank president and me being a pastor, society values what he does in a different way than values what I do, for example. The kinds of value judgments that affected this type of salary discrepancy we saw in education, the mental labor versus physical labor, the nationality, national background, the gender issue. Our group talked about some of the problems with the whole tenure system within educational settings, and thought that perhaps the question was phrased in such a way that the person coming in, the new woman professor coming in, ought to give some of her money to Bernice, but thought that probably was not very realistic and really wouldn't happen. There wasn't much we could do about Charlie unless the whole system of tenure were reevaluated. Is there more that some of you want to add to that?
No, just that we have a small group of pastors and aspiring professors. So.
Yeah. That was very personal.
So very personal.
Okay. Next.
We didn't talk about as much as what could be done about it, but why the situation was as it was. Mm-hmm. And we discussed the reason why Charlie was getting so much more, and mm-hmm. became the opinion that perhaps because of his PhD and mm-hmm. his experience as a teacher, mm-hmm. Whereas maybe it wasn't really, we didn't think race was a factor at all, whereas Bernice was a mm-hmm. African-American, because there are a lot of white people in the same kind of situation. Mm-hmm. We really didn't talk about what could be done, but why they were doing, why they were in these different categories. Mm-hmm. And Charlie was probably paid for his years of schooling and also his experience and so forth. I think one of the questions too said, I believe that society more or less considers a teacher in a high range of respectability. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is why they're paid more than a person of the skill as mm-hmm. Bernice is paid. Mm-hmm. Most people consider teachers as someone to look up to and respect. And they said to make some kind of a judgment. Well, we thought that it was unchristian to make a judgment on which people had were more valuable because mm-hmm. of their work. Bernice certainly had work that was valuable, that had mm-hmm. to be done, and it was important, mm-hmm. although it didn't require any kind of an education. Mm-hmm. And answering the question about Christianity and what's Christian and what is not, well, Christ said everybody was equal in his eyes, mm-hmm. but when it comes to money, you also mm-hmm. get the pay.
Okay. Someone
kind
wants
of
to
related to what she said. I thought that for Bernice, having worked there for 20 years, there should have been some kind of a reward system built in as far as being able to work herself into a different kind of position, either a supervisory or be able to work her way out of that area if she shows the reliability or whatever. Just as Charlie should be able to work his way down if he doesn't account for his. I mean, you know, but there should be an accountability and if she, if we're to believe exactly how this is written, that she has been a model employee, there should have been a way for her to work her way up out of the system into some other position, some kind of education provided for her as part of her job, you know, an opportunity to take cheaper classes or some way to work her way up to reward her. Go ahead.
All right. Next, I think we have one more group.
We thought maybe there should be one more, the traditional system up there. This didn't seem to fit into any of those, but it's sort of a tradition in our country to pay more for people with more education in that field. And let's see.
We did some discussing on whether the issue was that it was unchristian or Christian, saying that since it's a state university, that doesn't enter into it, was one opinion.
Yeah, that it has raised, to be,
and whether that matters.
It's just or unjust, and it wasn't very just.
And then we had, we talked about whether housekeeping was, that anybody chooses to do housekeeping. I had this thing, as an aspiring professor, I think a housekeeper should be paid more because being a professor is so much more fun. But then we discussed whether there's something could think that was fun.
And she probably needs to, Bernice needs to find some more people that agree with her and get a group that might lobby the unions at the university to help Bernice get paid more and watch her. That Charlie does his job better.
Okay. All right. Yes.
We talked a little bit about the fact that in this country, education is a big expense for some people, especially in college and advanced degrees, which is not necessarily true in all countries, where the state just pays the education. And the very fact that you have that system may in itself contribute to
All right. Okay. All right. Well, we just have a few minutes left. I wanted to say a couple things. Just something to think about. Jesus talks about how God sends the rain on the just and the unjust. You get rain whether you're deserving or not. Is there any... Does that say anything about how we should be paying each other? I don't know. That's a question. I raised that. James tells us that God gives to all generously. To all. Do we have in this country a wage system that's generous to all? I don't know. That doesn't seem like we do. last year, The Other Side magazine published an issue called A Giver's Guide, and they reported on various charitable organizations and people on their board and so forth. And the thing that probably upset most of our readers about this was that we reported with organizations on what their highest salary was and what their lowest salary was. And now some organizations wouldn't tell us, but most of them we got it. And, you know, the people who had salaries similar to those higher salaries, they felt threatened or attacked by that. And because it was a reminder of the range and the discrepancies that we have in our society in terms of how we're paid. And there's something in us, and I don't know if it's just in us as Christians or if it's just in us as people, that really, that bothers us. We want what we have, and we don't think we can live on less. But it makes us uncomfortable to think about there are people who are living on a lot less. It's ironic sometimes. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which works for the good of the poor and to eliminate poverty, and I admire what they do, their range of salaries was, the lowest paid was $18,000, and the highest paid was $144,000. Now, are they contributing to or to the elimination of those kinds of discrepancies, or are they, you know, working the other direction? In Exodus, we read about God providing manna and quail in the wilderness for the children of Israel as they're leaving Egypt, and we're told that each day they were to go and collect, and they would each be able to have enough for their heart's content, enough to eat and to be, not just to barely get by, but to meet their heart's content, to be happy, to be joyful, to enjoy life. But they were each to collect only exactly what they needed. And those who tried to collect more, to have a jump ahead of everyone else, they found the next day that all their food was spoiled. It seems as if, and Paul repeats that in 2 Corinthians as well, inciting that verse from Exodus, God intends for us all to have enough, all to have enough to eat and live to our heart's content. God isn't asking us to live in poverty. God is asking us not to struggle and be denied the benefits of life, but not to have way more than we need. And I wonder if we would really be committed to working for everyone to have enough, even if it meant that some of us weren't going to get as much. You know, when there's been debates about minimum wages, you don't hear Christians rising up and saying, we've got to have a higher minimum wage in this country. We may say, I can't live on less than $30,000, $40,000, $60,000, whatever it is, we can't live on less than that. If we don't think we can live on less than that, why aren't we advocating that as to be the minimum wage? It's strange. It's strange sometimes. Okay, now we're out of time, and I have to quit on time. I have here, and you can pick up if you're leaving and you want it, a little sheet about The Other Side magazine. And if you want to subscribe, there is a little form here that you can subscribe at half price. And so you can take that if you want. And
is that an equitable?
Well, I'll give it commercially. It's a great magazine. I would really recommend it. It's been a joy to have copies up here in Holden, and I'm a subscriber. And I'm sure you don't want to do your own commercial, so I'll just say we are very fortunate to have a staff member here, and I very much recommend it.
I'll second it too. Our family's taken it for a couple of years, and it's been a real important resource in our